Well, good to have the retreaters back. They're advancing, no longer retreating. And I understand they're all tired, had a busy, busy weekend, and I thought about preaching this sermon in my Ben Stein voice. You all know Ben Stein, don't you? He has a very dynamic delivery. But I thought that might be a bad idea. How you doing on your daily Bible reading? All of you who are current are reasonably so. All right, stick with it. We're doing very, very well. I've told you this story before. I'm going to tell you the story again. That's, you know, one of the dangers of hanging around me a long time. You get the same stories over and over. Back around 1900, 1890s to 1900, there was a Methodist preacher in Topeka, Kansas named Charles Sheldon. And Charles Sheldon complained about how bad the newspaper was. All they printed was bad news. There were a lot of terrible things that were happening, and the newspaper sensationalized all of it. And the newspaper editor got sick and tired of listening to Charles Sheldon complain, so he said, I'll tell you what, I'll turn the newspaper over to you for a week. You can do with it whatever you want to do, and let's see how it works out. And Charles Sheldon accepted the task. He took over as general editor of the Topeka newspaper. At that time, the Topeka newspaper had a circulation of about 12,000 a day. Charles Sheldon decided instantly that he would accept no advertising from tobacco companies, from alcohol companies, dance halls. He wasn't going to take any ads for dance halls. And when he did that, it cut the advertising revenue of the newspaper by about 60%. Over half of it was gone immediately. And the publisher thought, oh, we're doomed. You know, this we'll never recover from this. By the end of the week, he took it for 7 days. About the fifth day, he printed a story on the front page about a famine that was taking place in China. And because of his influence, they raised over $1 million. This is like 1900. That's back when $1 million is a lot of money. $1 million for famine relief in China. How were they able to do that? Well, in the week that Charles Sheldon was the editor of the Topeka newspaper, the circulation went from about 12,000 a day to over 340,000 a day. They were using every printing press in Topeka, in Kansas City, in St. Louis. They were outsourcing some of it to Chicago and some as far away as New York City. How do you judge success? You know, it seems to me that circulation figures are the only thing that works. At the end of the week, the editor took back the newspaper, declared the whole thing a dismal failure. Circulation was up to 300 plus thousand. He declared it a dismal failure. Oh, it was just novelty effect. It was the same Charles Sheldon, though, who later wrote a novel. And the novel was serialized in the Church Bulletin, first of all. And the title of the novel was In His Steps. And it was taken from the passage in 1 Peter 2 that we read today in our daily Bible reading. I want you to go with me to 1 Peter chapter 2. It is that novel, In His Steps, that popularized the phrase, what would Jesus do? That was all the people in the novel started asking, what would Jesus do in this situation? And they would do what they thought Jesus would do. And that became popular again, you know, a few years ago. But that's where all of that came from, Charles Sheldon's novel, In His Steps. Out of 1 Peter chapter 2. We're going to read verses 11 through 25 because in this section of 1 Peter chapter 2, Peter talks about what it means to be the chosen people of God. What does it mean? Now, he talks about us being the chosen people of God in the first part of that chapter, but then starting in verse 11, he talks about what it means to be the chosen people of God. What it means is changed lives. We're going to have to live changed lives because we're God's chosen people. Of course, following Jesus isn't just about what you know, it's about what you do with your life. You know, at the judgment day, we're not going to be handed a 500-question written test that we have to pass over knowing the will of God. We're going to be judged on what we've done. How have you done with understanding the will of God? So we're going to look at this section and talk about what it is that Peter calls for us to do. You know, it's not terribly complicated to live the Christian life. I mean, not terribly complicated. You don't need advanced degrees or anything like that to understand what it means to live the Christian life. All it takes is commitment, that's all. It just takes commitment. which of course just another way of saying it takes everything. And that is never going to happen around if we just piddle around with life. Let's start reading in 1 Peter chapter 2, starting in verse 11. We're just going to read down through just the first two verses, 11 and 12, as we start thinking about this, because what Peter calls us to do, first of all, is to live good lives. He says, "Dear friends, I urge you as aliens and strangers in the world to abstain from sinful desires which war against your soul. Live such good lives among the pagans that though they accuse you of doing wrong, they may see your good deeds and glorify God on the day He visits us." Live good lives. And it's interesting that he says to abstain from sinful desires which war against your soul. Did you know you're in a war? We are in a war, and we need never lose sight of that. Now, we got this war in Iraq and Afghanistan going on. It's a very frustrating kind of war because you don't have armies with equipment and uniforms and these people, whatever little success they manage to have is done by sneak attacks and ambush and it's frustrating because you just can't get hold of them very well and wipe that thing out all at once. That is exactly what our spiritual warfare is like. Sneak attacks and ambush. And they don't wear uniforms and they won't stand up in front of you and say, "Oh, by the way, I'm the bad guy." Our war is a continual, just low-level, continual, frustrating struggle. That's what we're doing in our lives. And it's very important that we take this war very, very seriously because what is at stake is your soul itself. That's the stakes of the war. And in many cases, that, by the way, is the battlefield also. That's what's at stake in this war that we're in against the sinful desires that come to us in this world. We're in a war. And we need to live such good lives that people will admit that this life is the right life. People in the world will look at us and they may respect us for who we are and what we do. They may respect the fact that we tell the truth. They may respect the fact that we are honest in our dealings and generally live good moral lives. They will never love us because of that. And if you want to be loved by the world, you're in the wrong outfit. We will never be loved. You know, Teddy Roosevelt was once talking about the United States of America right about the turn of the century, about the beginning of the 1900s. And he was talking about the European powers. And he said, they may respect us and they may fear us, but they will never love us. And he is exactly right. I mean, we have just never really been loved by the Europeans for some reason. They're just never going to love us. Well, we need to understand that about the world, too. As Christians, we need to understand that the world may respect us. They are never going to love us. They may like what we do, but that's about it. Matthew chapter 13, Jesus tells a parable about a man who went out and sowed good seed in his field, and then his enemy came during the night and sowed weeds among the wheat. And it all grew up together, and the servants went, "Oh no, we've got weeds in the wheat. Do you want us, Master, to go in and root all those out?" And he says, No, wait till the harvest. You might tear up the good stuff while you're getting out the bad stuff." So the weeds and the wheat are going to have to grow up together until the judgment. That is exactly the world we live in. We are living among people who don't share any of our faith. And we're going to have to be there. That's just the way we live. People will admit that our lives are in the right direction, but you have to decide your life direction. It's your responsibility to decide the way you're going to live your life and what you will be. If you live a good life, as we are called to live, that's a life that's going to have It's a life that's going to make a difference, in the bottom line. You're going to have influence in people's lives. I want you to think just for a minute, just in your own mind. You don't have to tell me anything about this, but I just want you to think about this. Think about someone who has influenced you in a positive way. It might be a preacher, might be a Bible class teacher, might be a song leader, might be an elder, might be a public school teacher, might be a co-worker, might be a boss you had, or someone that worked for you. But just think about someone who influenced you in a positive way. that helped you live a better life because of example or teaching or whatever. Anyone, just think of that person right now and realize for just a moment that you can be that person to someone else. You can influence someone else. You can make a difference in someone else's life in exactly the same way by living a good life. Exactly as we are called to do. Live such good lives among the pagans that although they accuse you of doing wrong, they may see your good deeds and glorify God on the day He visits us. Following Christ necessarily means living a good life. I mean, absolutely necessarily means that. And not only that, it also means that we follow the rules. I want you to start reading with me again in verse 13. We're going to read down through verse 17. And I've got a whole lot to say here. Submit yourselves for the Lord's sake, Peter says, to every authority instituted among men, whether to the king as the supreme authority, or to governors who are sent by him to punish those who do wrong and to commend those who do right. For it is God's will that by doing good, you should silence the ignorant talk of foolish men. Live as free men, but do not use your freedom as a cover-up for evil. Live as servants of God. Show proper respect to everyone. Love the brotherhood of believers. Fear God. Honor the king. If I could just paraphrase that whole paragraph, it's follow the rules. Follow the rules. That is practically an un-American sentiment. You know that? I mean, it is practically un-American to say you need to follow the rules. I mean, we have never been known as a people who were very interested in following the rules. I think I've told you before, there was a historian at the University of Wisconsin named Frederick Jackson Turner back in the 1930s came up with what's called the Frontier Thesis. The frontier thesis says that all of the laws and policies of the United States have been shaped by the interests of the frontier. For the vast majority of our history, we've had a frontier. And all the laws and policies revolve around the needs of the frontier. And then he started talking about what characterized the people on the frontier. And I'm telling you, it sounds like the ordinary American. We're very self-reliant. You know people who are self-reliant, don't you? They never go to the doctor. What's the point of going to a doctor? Just, you know, put a little WD-40 on it. You'll be fine in a week. Home remedies will be fine. You don't need to do it yourself. You don't need any professional help. Just do it yourself. We're very self-reliant. We're very self-reliant when it comes to law and order. We don't need law courts, lawyers, judges, juries, none of that. What we need is a posse and a rope. We know how to deal with hoss thieves and cattle rustlers. You know, we just need a posse and a rope. And you kind of get this whole sense that America is founded on this idea of not following the rules. We don't do rules very well as Americans. Well, that's a real shame. Because we wind up ignoring authority. And then we kind of enshrine this as if it were a good thing somehow. Oh, we're just so rough and rugged and just really, really neat people because we don't follow the rules. How many of you have been to the Outback Steakhouse? Oh, yeah, you need to go. See, you get a good steak there at the Outback Steakhouse. You know what their motto is, don't you? No rules, just right. Man, that is a marketing slogan that will absolutely resonate with Americans. No rules, man, that's me. Well, the truth of the matter is Christians are really good citizens. I mean, we follow the rules. We have to be good citizens. I talked this morning in the Bible class about a letter from Pliny, the governor, to Trajan, the emperor, and he was just baffled because he didn't know what to do with these Christians. They haven't done anything wrong. The early Christians were accused of all kinds of crimes. People didn't understand what the Lord's Supper was about, and they accused us of cannibalism. We're eating flesh and drinking blood. There was a whole lot they didn't understand about the early church, and they accused us of the vilest kinds of crimes. And when Pliny wrote back to Trajan, he said, I don't understand. I'm supposed to prosecute them, but they're not doing anything wrong. People have to understand that we're good citizens. You know, one of the reasons that churches have tax advantages in the United States of America is because the government recognizes that we do a lot of good. We do a lot of good. We are good citizens, and it's good to have churches in your community. A person who lives life obeying the rules will wind up living a pretty full and happy life overall. It is, it's just kind of a fact of life that rebellious people hurt themselves a lot. Rebellious people hurt themselves. They just dash themselves against the immovable rock of society. Years ago, I read a story in the newspaper about a guy. I think he was just a young teenager at the time. He was out fishing in a farm pond out here, not too far away from where we are right now. And he was out just fishing one afternoon, taking life easy, and he looked up, and there was a guy in a suit carrying a Thompson submachine gun looking at him. And he realized that this guy in the suit with a Thompson submachine gun was public enemy number one, Pretty Boy Floyd. And Floyd looked at him and he said, "Having any luck?" And the guy said, "Well, yeah, I've caught a couple." And Floyd said, "You mind if I fish a little while with you?" "Well, what are you going to say if a guy with a Thompson submachine gun asks if he can fish with you?" "Oh, sure, no problem. Yeah, absolutely. I got extra poles and got extra tackle over there." Pretty Boy Floyd leaned his submachine gun up against a tree and started fishing with this guy. And just spent the whole afternoon with it. Had a wonderful time. Had a great day. They were out there fishing, caught some fish, got the fish out, cleaned them, fried them, ate them. They're sitting there in the shade. And Pretty Boy Floyd looks at this guy and he says, "You know, people read the newspapers and they think I live the high life. I'm out here robbing banks." If you don't know, Pretty Boy Floyd killed 10 people. He shot dead 10 people. He said, "People think I'm living the high life out here because I rob banks and have a lot of money. Let me tell you something." He said, "I got friends charge me $100 a night to sleep in their barn. I stop off for a sandwich. Somebody sell me a bologna sandwich and a Coke for $5. Everybody else pays 10 cents a gallon for gasoline. I have to pay $2 a gallon for gasoline. I got every lawman in 5 states and the federal government trying to kill me every single day." And he said, "I can't see any future for me at all." The story went on to say that within 2 weeks, Pretty Boy Floyd had been shot dead in Ohio. We watch these movies, you know, they come out with these movies and these TV shows about these wild, crazy, lawless characters that live by their wits and their fists and their guns. And it's the most idiotic kind of lie because rebellious people hurt themselves a lot. There's no glamour in a life that doesn't follow the rules. And there's nothing about it, it won't create anything like a good life. It's just not going to happen. We need to be good citizens. You know, people who live within the law generally do okay. They live stable lives, keep a job, raise their families. They're surrounded by people who love and care about them. They're respected members of the congregation. They generally do okay if they follow the rules. If you can't submit to human government, you won't follow Jesus Christ, I promise you. Because you can't see Him and there's no iron fist hanging over your head all the time. If you cannot follow human government, you can't follow Jesus Christ. And to follow Him means to imitate Him, to do His will. Let's pick it up in verse 18, read down through the end of the chapter. Specifically, Peter's writing to slaves, but in a very real sense, we're all slaves of Jesus Christ, so these words are for us as well. "Slaves, submit yourselves to your masters with all respect, not only to those who are good and considerate, but also to those who are harsh. For it is commendable if a man bears up under the pain of unjust suffering because he is conscious of God. But how is it to your credit if you receive a beating for doing wrong and endure it? But if you suffer for doing good and you endure it, this is commendable before God. To this you are called, Because Christ suffered for you, leaving you an example that you should follow in His steps. He committed no sin, no deceit was found in His mouth. When they hurled their insults at Him, He did not retaliate. When He suffered, He made no threats. Instead, He entrusted Himself to Him who judges justly. He Himself bore our sins in His body on the tree so that we might die to sins and live for righteousness. By His wounds you've been healed. For you were like sheep going astray, but now you've returned to the shepherd and overseer of your souls. We need to imitate Jesus. I really think that this is the lost doctrine of Jesus Christ. This is the doctrine that nobody ever talks about, nobody ever preaches or teaches, and it's just not very popular to think about. If you suffer for doing good and you endure it, this is commendable before God. To this you were called. To this you were called. Christianity was expected to hurt. If we follow Jesus Christ, we will at different times be persecuted and opposed, possibly oppressed. There was a great editorial in a recent issue of the Christian Chronicle talking about the Churches of Christ in Nicaragua and how they had started out very small and slow in the 70s, and then in the 80s they exploded in growth. How did they do that? Well, they did that partly because they were living under a dangerous regime. They weren't allowed to assemble. They weren't allowed to build church buildings. They weren't allowed to own property. This was a Marxist government that they were under. And as a result, they kind of went underground. And preachers made enormous sacrifices to go halfway across the country and preach the gospel to people they didn't know. And the church just grew and grew and grew and grew to the point that now there are 80-some congregations in the country of Nicaragua. A lot of it came about because they kind of had to hide and do things in a very secretive way. See, that's the rule of Christianity. This is the exception. The ability that we have to gather together without oppression, without fear of being harassed by our government. This is the exception in all the history of the church. The great rule is that we'll be opposed and persecuted. And Peter says we need to follow the example of Jesus. We need to live in trust of God. That's how Jesus lived, completely trusting in God. We need to live in trust. We need to absorb the abuse of the enemies of Christ. Where do you read about Christians retaliating against their abusers? Where in all the New Testament, where do you read that? You don't read that. You read about us absorbing it, just taking it. And going on, just like Jesus did. That's what we're called to do. That's what we're called to be. And this is practically un-American too. What? Just take a thumping and move on? Yep. That's what we're called to do. That's what we're called to be. And this is a life that at the end will have an absolutely clear conscience. There was a religious writer several hundred years ago, 300 or 400 years ago, named John Woolman. And at one point, he kept a journal. He's one of these guys that wrote down everything. He kept a journal about all of his experiences and all of his study and everything. And at one point, he was robbed by some highwaymen. He was just riding down on his horse, just riding down the road, and some guys jumped out with knives, and they demanded all of his money. And he gave them his money, and they let him go. He got home that night and he was writing in his journal about the experience of being robbed, and he went down a list and he said, I thank God that although I was robbed of my money, I was not robbed of my life. I thank God that although they took my all, they did not take much. And I thank God that I was the one robbed and not the one robbing. We need to be able to face the Lord with a clear conscience. And at the judgment, we will know that we are not evildoers. We do not participate in cruelty and violence. We will do what is right no matter what. in World War II in the China-India-Burma theater. There was a British soldier named Ian McNaughton who was captured by the Japanese. He was weak and sick, and they didn't guard him very well. Because he was weak and sick, they didn't think he was going anywhere. And he escaped. And he hid out by day and tried to travel by night as best he could, trying desperately to get back to British lines, or Allied lines anyway, find some friendly face that would help him. And he was almost recaptured a couple of times by Japanese patrols, and he was getting weaker and sicker, and he was hungry and afraid all the time. And one day, as he was trying to find a place to hide for the day in the jungle, he's trying to find some place where he'd get off the path and hide somehow, he looked down into the path, and he saw in the path the print in the mud of a British Army boot. And he recognized the boot print as being British Army issue. You know, he'd seen a lot of those boot prints in his lifetime. And he realized that he could follow that trail. He could follow that track. And he did. He followed that trail of British Army boot prints and finally got back to a forward camp and safety. And the British rescued him and brought him in, and he got safely home. This is a dangerous world, folks. We are in a war. And it is a dangerous and scary world out there with a lot of trouble and a lot of pain. And we're weak and we're sick. But we can get safely home if we will follow in His steps. Following Jesus isn't just what you know. It's what you do. You have to live a good life, living morally upright. You have to follow the rules and be a good citizen, just as Peter pointed out here. You have to accept that this life has some pain in it. And just the fact that we're followers of Jesus is going to bring pain into our lives. It just will. But this life, of course, is one of hope and joy, a kind of confident and cheerful optimism. Because in this world we are like Him, and our lives have purpose. We are going someplace in this life. We don't take our cues from the world because we're not going that way. We're headed home, and we're going to get there by following in His steps. If you're not a Christian this evening, we're going to sing an invitation song and give you an opportunity to obey the gospel. If you believe that Jesus is the Son of God, you're willing to confess His name before men, to repent of sin, and to be immersed in water for the forgiveness of your sins, you can be raised to a new life with the Lord. But if you're a Christian and you really haven't done His will, and you know all too well that you're weak and sick and lost out there in the world, there's a way home. All you have to do is turn it around and follow Him home. Follow in His steps, and you will be fine. If you need to respond publicly to Jesus' invitation, we urge you to do it right now.